Episode 9, NFDC Goes to Camp.
This week, Alyssa, Thomas, and I led a Sunday morning discussion at Pod Camp Atlanta. The title of our session was Chronicling Creativity.
Those of you that are here, we are North Fulton Drama Club, or at least the three people that try to steer the boat and keep it afloat. My name is Thomas Strickland. This is my wife.
Nikki Strickland.
And then...
Alyssa Jackson.
Not my wife. North Fulton Drama Club has been operating now for a year and a couple of months. Come on in if you want to. You don't have to. No pressure. We have produced two shows, and we are in the middle of rehearsals for our third show. All these shows have been Shakespearean in nature and in execution. I don't know if we really want to go into the origin right now. No, let's not do that. So, Chronicling Creativity. I came up with this title late at night after Amber said, you guys should do a session. I'm like, oh, what are we going to do a session about? But really this is similar to when we first started doing podcasts for the Georgia Podcast Network. Again, it was Amber and Rusty saying, you guys should do a podcast. We're like,
tell you what to do.
Yeah. True. We were like, what would we ever do a podcast for? But it turns out that the podcast does have a purpose for us. I don't know if you want to go into it now.
I think it serves a couple of purposes. The one thing that it does for us is it sort of establishes our personality in a way as a theater group that I don't see a lot of other theater groups doing. You can listen to our podcast and you know who we are. And we spend so much time cracking up at one another, I think, also, that you end up with a really good snapshot of, like, if you're going to come get involved with us, you have a good idea of the kind of people you're throwing your lot in with. And that's something that we pride ourselves on as a theater group, is it's part of what makes us unique, is our attitude and our attitude towards theater as an art and how we want to run our theater company. And I definitely agree, having the podcast is a way to establish who we are, how we do our business, the kind of people we want to come and be involved with us.
We value transparency a great deal in what it is that we do. We think there's a lot that can happen with theater that has kind of a shielded, don't let the rest of everyone else know about it kind of feel to it. I don't know if it's intentional, if that's just the way it has been as it's fallen out. But we try to use the podcast and, to a lesser extent, the blog on the website, NorthFultonDramaClub.org, to reveal what it is that we are doing. You know, where are we in the stage of this production? How much more do we have to do? What do we have accomplished? And that's the podcast we've been doing. We do them mostly when we're in rehearsals and in production. We do them once a month. We all go to the podcast party that Amber and Rusty are so kind enough to throw. And we basically do is talk about what it is that we've done and what we have yet to do. I think this will serve as our podcast for this month. So
it makes a good benchmark for us, because we spend so much time, especially during a show, really just buried. And then we come out of it like once a month and sit down and say, well, we've done this and this and this and this and this, and then we kind of know again where we are, even though I think we're fairly good at keeping track of it. I think it makes it kind of concrete for us. But I think the best thing that we did and the coolest thing that we did was for the last show, we did a cast podcast. We took our little recorder around, we talked to everybody in the cast, and it made a really great document of our process and our people and our show that I think was the best thing that we did the whole time last year.
That's great. I mean, you talked about transparency, Thomas, and I think that's, we talk a lot about transparency just with social media, new media in general, and I think that's great because, I mean, God, I wouldn't know what goes into organizing a theater production and a drama club, and, I mean, it's just really interesting to hear the behind-the-scenes kind of things, especially because, like, for me, I'm a person who gets very caught up in logistics. Like, I want to know, like, even with planning PodCamp, like, I read everything I could. I mean, that was one good thing about PodCamp is that everything is very transparent, you know, so I could, like, read and find out, well, what exactly do you do? And I think, I mean, I just think, you know, that it's great that you guys are doing that.
Well, it's interesting also what comes out of the conversations that we have in these podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we'll sort of say, okay, well, this week we're going to talk about this and this and this, where we are in our rehearsal process, and it's interesting the things that, like, one of us will say, and then we'll be like, oh, really? That's what you meant by that? Well, that's great. Now we know where we are. Like, it's a conversation that I think the podcasts are a part of our rehearsal process because these things will come out, and it shows us a new light on what we're doing.
Right, because even though right now we essentially live with one another.
Sure. I don't live with them, but during my
second time, the comment just said, hey, not my wife.
Yeah.
Mistakes have been made.
Do you know how many people are listening to your podcast?
I don't think I have any idea. I don't know if you guys know what the stats
are.
We
don't have very accurate stats.
I have no clue.
I guess hopefully you guys aren't too...
It's fine.
What was that we don't have accurate
No.
During,
we're doing that with the next version of the site.
I'm
2.0.
Yeah, I'm the stats sort of nerd.
Yeah.
I know that during our, during the lead up to our last tryouts, between Atlanta Performs and LiveJournal and all this other stuff, our actual site was getting about 3,000 hits a day. On average, some days less, some days more, and then after the audition notice drops off, Atlanta Performs, it just drops away pretty drastically. But during that time, we had a podcast posted, so there was an opportunity for at least that many people to try to listen to it, and we were pimping it pretty hard at that time.
It's not just for your own group. It's really, it's marketing as well.
It's marketing. It is for our own group equally. I mean, the neat thing was... one of the girls that we cast in our current show, I think it was the first rehearsal, came up to you, I think, and said, yeah, I listened to all of you guys' podcasts this weekend. It was great. It's like, thanks. That's awesome. And that serves the purpose we were talking about. You know, you can get to know who we are from the podcast. Because the three of us will talk during the month of the podcast. From time to time, we will bring in another current cast member, to join us in the conversation, and we'll talk to them about the show, and it usually turns out to be not only informative and also very practical for us to get a benchmark, but it's usually pretty funny. I mean, we managed to cast some pretty hilarious people.
And people get a sense of your personality listening
too,
I think. I mean, maybe that girl, maybe listening to the podcast made the, you know, difference between whether or not she auditioned, because it seems like, you know, if you go and audition for a theater group, you don't know who these people are. You don't know if they're going to be, like, serious hard asses and the whole thing is not going to be any fun. You don't know. So listening, they get a sense of, you know, you're real people, you're, you know, fun people, and might make a difference.
Well, especially with what we do, I think it's incredibly important. When we started NFDC, we got a lot of flack from the theater community in Atlanta because we are a community theater group and we started out with Shakespeare. And we got so much flack. People were like, well, why don't you start out with something easier?
Maybe you should start with Our Town.
Yeah, we essentially got, you have to do Our Town and Lend Me a Tenor before you're qualified to take on, you know,
which
Shakespeare.
And I'm like, this conception in the world about Shakespeare that it's on a platform or on a pedestal, it's this Shakespeare, and that's not how we approach it. I mean, we approach Shakespeare as something that it was made for the people, it should be applicable to everybody, and, you know, we try to bring a newness and a uniqueness to every one of our productions. And what the podcast helps is, since we're talking out our ideas and how we're approaching these plays and what we're thinking about them, I think it lends us some authenticity to what we're doing, some authority, that we know what we're doing, we know what this play is about, we have a solid idea for what we're doing. We're not amateurs, we're not...
We have a reading, you might not agree with it, but we have one.
Yeah, we have one. So I think that helps establish who we are and says, well, you know what, we don't have to do Our Town. We are perfectly legitimate in doing what we're doing.
But clearly we will talk all day, so we need to let some other people out.
But there's that word again, accessibility. You know, one of our cast members this last week was, she was leaving the rehearsal and was like, really like the way you guys are doing this. The way we approach Shakespeare is, it's not high and mighty. I mean, yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I consider Shakespeare to be almost biblical in my respect for the material, but it's so applicable. I mean, it's written so well that the situations still apply just as much now as they did, or more so, when they were written. And so, if you take the material and use it in a fashion that people will understand, but to make people understand that you don't have to have an advanced degree to get this, you don't have to be well read to understand. And that's the big thing, is you can laugh at this because the humor in Shakespeare is very base. I mean, their body does not even begin to describe certain things, but the way it's presented, it's usually very, oh, here it is, blah, 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 and it sounds so stentorian that it could never possibly be funny or the least bit naughty, but it is.
Yeah, I think that one of the girls in our first show said that she went to see Much Ado, or I don't know what, with her dad when she was like 12, and she looked at her dad and she said, Shakespeare's dirty. And I was like, yes, that's exactly right. So,
you know about other groups that are also doing what you're doing as far as podcasting goes? You know, any other?
I don't know.
Atlanta Performs is doing your podcast, but that's...
Yeah, we do. The Atlanta Coalition of Performing Arts is a performing arts service organization in Atlanta. We serve almost 180 organizations, performing arts organizations throughout the metro area. And we do a podcast where most of the people I interview are...
the royal we of Joe Winter.
Yes. Are artistic directors. And there are a few actors here and there and other sorts of artists that I've interviewed. And what was the question again? And we're just chronicling stories from throughout Metro Atlanta. It's almost more of a chronicle of the history of theater, music, dance, arts in the Atlanta area. So it's a little different from what the North Fulton Drama Club is doing, it's very interesting. I've used them as an example when I've spoken to other folks in the industry who are kind of trying to get the idea of blogging and podcasting, and you know, they'll put up a blog and wonder why they're not getting any readership or any comments or anything like that. And I say, you should check these people out, because they're just letting everyone out there in the world know how you work, how you operate, and it's that transparency that people value. And if I could redirect this a little bit, back to the title of the session, chronicling creativity, how taking time out for reflection and discussion in a podcast can help you stay focused.
Yeah,
that's. As you were saying earlier, valuing that transparency and talking about what you do has also helped me, you know, understand more about the business as well.
Yeah, I think the era of trying to protect trade secrets is going away. And that's something that we talked about at SoCon, was that, you know, it seems like the people who try so hard to protect, like, no, this is my idea, and I'm not going to tell anybody about it, usually don't really have very good ideas. Because the understanding is becoming, you know, if you put your idea out there, nobody's going to steal your idea. Someone might learn from it and be motivated to do something of their own, but they're going to do it differently.
Right.
You know, and you're sharing, by you sharing, you know, your knowledge and your experience, you're giving to everyone else to create their own, and you can continue to create your own in your way, and everybody's sharing, and everybody's happy, and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. And I don't know if, back to your question, I don't know right offhand of any theater groups that are doing the same thing we're doing, but one of our guys, after the last show, started doing his own podcast. It amuses me. I don't understand why he works with us. He's so serious and so committed, but he loves working with us, so that's awesome. But he does his own podcast about, like, creating a character or being on stage or whatever like that, like very informational kind of how to be an actor kind of things. And so, you know, that's something else that I think has kind of come from us, because Daniel was pretty interested in, I mean, I'm not going to take credit for it. But
it's the Alchemist Theater Podcast, I believe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't remember.
You can look him up on iTunes.
We should probably add him as an affiliate, I guess.
I've been meaning to talk to him about, you know, just... Here.
We could just add him and not
add him and not tell him.
I mean, we'll tell him. He shouldn't be pissed off about getting more publicity.
No. His name is Daniel Roach. He's a remarkably good actor. He's working with us again for this show. I think that, you know, regarding the trade secrets thing, that's spot on. There is the concept that the magic of theater comes from to an extent from being secret, staying backstage, staying hidden until time for the show, and everyone come look at the show, and isn't it pretty?
Yeah.
And then after the show is over, leave. Don't bother looking behind the curtain.
What were you going to say?
Lots of things are percolating. One is that's a very Western conception of theater.
Yes.
There's a famous study of theater by Cornel Bach, who talked about Eastern theater as being exactly the opposite, where all of the magic happens on stage. And there's a lot more transparency. There's no sort of offstage magic that goes on. It's all acting in front of you. But in terms of other podcasts that are doing the same thing, what's unique, it seems to me, about your podcast is that you're working through Patrick and the girls, the show. Hi, Patrick.
Hey. Hey, Lauren. Hey.
Hi.
Megan. Hey.
An excellent use of stickers.
Is that you're working through a lot of your creative process with the podcast, which is slightly different than what you're doing, where you're talking to people about their creative process.
Yes.
Seems like there's one degree of remove there, but we had a similar experience. We do, with a co-host, we do two podcasts, one interviewing mystery authors, and so we've had the opportunity to speak with some of these, with a different sort of creative personnel. And the other one is analyzing film noir. And what's happened is that we're starting to find that there's a big crossover audience, and we wanted a format that was more fluid, that we could use just when the opportunity was there. So we started a series of specials called the Noir Cast Special. Noir Cast is our site, and that has a crossover between the two audiences. We interviewed Ryan Johnson, who's the writer and director of the film Brick that came out last year, for the mystery authors one, and it was at that moment we realized we should have had him on the Noir Cast. So what we did is we were in New York City for something, and we thought, you know what, we're going to find the perfect crossover material, and we interviewed the playwright, director, and two of the actors of an off-Broadway play that was inspired by film noir. So that was our first Noir Cast special, and so it was an opportunity to reach out to some of this creative personnel. What was neat about that is they actually ended up, although we were there as show hosts, doing what you're talking about. They sort of worked out a lot of what they've been doing in the course of the podcast, and in roughly an hour, they figured out a lot of what it was they'd been meaning to say to one another. Mm-hmm. So it's strange how somehow the medium starts to change the way that you communicate amongst yourselves. And then they ended it by doing a live reading from the play. So it ends up with about 10 minutes of sort of radio, you know, show.
Yeah.
So I just wonder how much the fact that people know they're being recorded and it's going to go out on the web might stifle. I'm just asking, you know, they're being completely forthright about everything they're feeling and all their vulnerabilities and everything like that, you know?
I don't know.
I think our first,
there's a huge difference.
Yeah.
I literally the other day went back and listened to our entire history, like one after the other, and there's a huge difference between our first podcast and our last one. In our first one, we were very
sort of, what is going on?
Yeah, like we had an
idea. Like, we have an agenda, we might stick to it and talk about what's on our agenda.
And then as we've gone on, especially when we got more comfortable with being with the whole process and being in the microphones and everything, I don't think we stifle at all. I think sometimes we could even
shut up.
We get to the point where we'll even sort of argue with each other and then, you know, back off a bit. But yeah, I don't think it's ever been
back to your mind of saying, uh-oh, this is going out. People are going to listen to this. We better, you know, chill out.
There's only one time I can remember that we had anything that anyone said that was not meant in the way that, as I listened back to it, I realized that that is way too much of an inside, like, you develop your own vocabulary, you know, and it was way inside baseball, and so I just said, we need to excise that, like, those three words, because no one else is going to understand it, and it's going to be taken utterly and completely out of context. The one time we've ever edited anything like that out of a podcast. I think the only thing that we don't address on the podcast, and probably the one challenge, and we do sort of address it but at a distance, is personnel problems. We came up with the name. Our original name was going to be Drama Club,
just
straight
drama
out
club.
Drama Club, and it was because where we got the idea was
Fight Club.
Like Fight Club.
Except that kind of is completely opposite of what you're doing with a podcast. You do talk about Drama Club.
Right. Well, no. But it was the first rule of Drama Club is there's no drama in Drama Club. Like,
keep
the
your
problems that
drama
we had had with other groups was the fact that the drama took over the production. You know, when you have these personnel problems and personality conflicts, and then it completely overshadows what you're trying to put on the stage. So that was going to be our idea, was to keep that, and we've successfully done that with keeping that personnel drama away from the cast. And so that's the one thing we don't talk about explicitly is like, oh, well, this person did this, and we had to talk with them, and then they blew something up, and it was bad. Like, we don't say that. We'll say, you know,
there are challenges.
So we have, that's, I think, the one thing that we won't. And that's more for privacy issues anyway.
Well, and just not to be, you know,
not airing your dirty,
just not to be shitty.
It's just not worth it.
I think talking about yourself is one thing versus talking about someone else that's, you know, up to them to decide.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not like the real world.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, there's no.
No
confessional booth action.
Right. And there's also the concept that coming from my perspective as someone interviewing creative people about what, you know, about their processes. Sometimes it's some of the folks that I talk to, it's a scary concept to them that there's a fine line between transparency and sending out a marketing message to their audiences. Just yesterday I got back from a conference of other performing arts service organizations from throughout the country, and I, you know, led a session on Web 2.0, and I didn't mention that point specifically, but it came across to everyone, and there was what came back to me was essentially one of three different reactions: either "Wow, this really makes me think about it," or "Wow, this is really scary stuff," or "Wow, this guy is really full of it." but that second option, "This stuff is really scary," you know, it's because it's not just the performing arts industry, it's really every industry we're kind of used to working in. A modernist sort of mindset.
I think that
you were going to say yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, to respond to your question, and you know, I don't know that I have a better response or a good response even, but I have noticed something very strange in terms of age and ability and willingness to air this sort of stuff publicly. And I'm a former college professor and was until just this last year, and I've noticed that in terms of sort of just Web 2.0 thinking, people in their 20s and younger will put anything out there. And in fact, they seem to almost be hungry for an opportunity for somebody to plump,
Not pluck or plump.
To plug?
To plug.
Plump.
Plop.
On a mic or a camera in front of them so that they can air their most intimate secrets.
Well,
it's bizarre.
I want to address that because I disagree with the age thing.
Okay,
you finish
what
you're
saying. I'll finish and then this is good. Then it's my experience that people in their 30s generally take a little time to warm up to the medium and are unsure at first and are very conscious of it being a medium that they're using and whether it's recording or and how do you react to this medium specifically and how much of yourself do you give in this medium. And people in their 40s are very, very hesitant, 40s and beyond. Now, that's probably a gross generalization, but I've encountered this over and over in academia and since in the podcasting arena.
Well, so, I disagree with that because I think it's a perception, and certainly sometimes it's true, but I don't think that it's... I think the perception sometimes overshadows the reality. And this is... I think a lot of people get too caught up and focused on, oh, the medium, we're blogging, we're podcasting. But this stuff has been going on forever, people sharing things.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I keep coming back to in my mind is when we were at Blog Savannah, there we were in a session about PR and the blogger was the title. And people in there were talking about, well, you can't share personal details when you're marketing your business because your customers will think bad things or whatever, it'll affect your bottom line.
And depends on who your customer is.
There was an older gentleman in there. He was in his 60s or I think maybe his 70s, honestly. And he was saying, well, actually, I worked for I think it was a BMW dealership or some car dealership for like 40 years. And every time there was an event, a big event in my personal life or my family life, I would take out a full-page ad in a magazine or in the newspaper, like the birth of my child, and just write about nothing about the car, nothing about, you know, the business, here's why you should buy this, you know, great car. No, it was all about his personal life. And he developed these relationships with his customers over the years, relationships that lasted years and years because people felt like, people realized, we're talking to a person.
I would say
this is a person.
I mean, on a different level, my dad was in the same business for like 30 years or whatever, and he owned his own business eventually, and he had customers that knew him, knew me, knew my mother from as long as I can remember. There are people that I've known this way who followed my dad from store to store to store to store to store,
mm-hmm.
who because they knew him. And I think my dad didn't take out an ad,
right.
But he was never shy with people about himself or his family or anything like that.
Well, I guess just to respond, I wasn't trying to say people won't share. I'm just curious, do you see a tendency without... I'm not trying to say this is a hard and fast rule. I was saying it seems to me. Do you see a tendency that according to age group, people are more or less willing to interact personally with a new medium? I guess that's what I was trying to say. It seems younger people will just sort of wholeheartedly embrace any new medium you put in front of them because they've been exposed to so many.
I think it depends on your personal experience. Maybe some people have noticed that in their personal experience. In my personal experience, it's been across the board with regard to age, medium, degree of share, you know, so I really don't feel comfortable making a generalization.
I think that I'm very new to this, and I'm in my late 30s, but I work with somebody, and Erin's in her 20s, and she is so open. She'll put anything out on her blog, and it's frightening to me because I'm like, my God, you're naked out there. Everyone can see you, and she's very comfortable with that. And I'm in my late 30s going, oh, my God, you know, is it a 20-something thing? And then I'm like, no, it's not. It's how comfortable she is with who she is and what she's willing to put out there. I'm getting better at it, but I have a flip version of this. One of my directors that I work for is in his 50s. He's so out there. I mean, he's got his stuff on Front Street, and he's completely comfortable with it, and he's new to all of this. So I think you're right. I think it depends on your experiences and all those things, but I worked for Marriott International for 6 years, and you were spot on when you said developing relationships by people personally knowing you is absolutely the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that they send you to Marriott to go do. You learn birth dates, you learn children's names, you learn everything about that person, and you begin sharing. I've been away from Marriott for 5 years. I still keep in touch with all of my contacts. I know their birth dates, and they have helped me now with this business build more relationships. So I think you're right with that. It just depends.
And I think with that age spectrum that you're seeing, I think it's translating this idea of what Marriott does, mm-hmm. what my father did, what Amber heard about the guy with the with the personal ads.
Remind us.
It's about, I think, to kind of bring it back around to get people comfortable with this whole podcasting business or blogging or whatever, is to kind of bring it back around to what you do with Marriott, sorry, what you do with whatever, with these newspaper ads, with so on and so forth, et cetera, it's all the same thing. You're just reinventing, you know, and I think it's making that connection. Because I think a lot of people, not a lot of people, some people, perhaps people you've been running into, deal with it as like sort of a scary thing.
Right.
And it is hyper available. And as, you know, as someone with kind of a split relationship with North Fulton Drama Club uses my whole name. People know who I am. They can find me probably in any way they chose to. My personal blog does not and is very divorced because I have experienced at the workplace discrimination because of my political beliefs and some other things that make me want to make my personal blog harder to find by my name. But that's like that's a choice that I make about the amount of privacy that I have with that. You could probably still figure out who I am, but I make it a little bit harder. So it's all, you know, it's a spectrum. It's a very different thing for a lot of people.
And Sherry Heil talked about how her, you know, she's really big into all of this. She's very smart and blows me away. And she's in her 30s, and she's, you know, very a big fan of transparency and everything. And she talks about how her 12-year-old son, like, she keeps trying to tell him, you need to get on MySpace. Because all we hear about is, oh, MySpace is coming to get your teenage daughters and sons, and they have no boundaries, and they're, you know, they're telling the world all their secrets. Well, actually, not all the time.
Well, you know, MySpace is just teaching your children really horrible web design. But that's
right.
Really...
send them somewhere else.
Facebook is at least prettier.
Exactly.
But, you know, the neat thing about the interpersonal relationships is, I mean, we will freely admit that the heart of our audiences that come to see our shows, we depend a great deal on the mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, cousins, friends of those
co-workers
that are in our shows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the benefits of the cast podcast we did, and we'll do another one this show because it was just great to do, was we do the cast podcast. Everyone is excited to take part in it from one age to the other. And all we're asking for is just a few minutes, and we compile it all together, and we give them the link, and then they can take that link and they can send it to their, again, mothers, fathers, sisters, to get... Because there's something neat about telling someone else, look, I recorded something, and it's on the web.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's the same kind of feeling that you had when you first moved into your own apartment, and you can say, look, there's my name in the phone book. You can find me out there. And that's a nice way of virally spreading the word about North Fulton Drama Club, and maybe we'll have more people come out, see the shows, and then when we have auditions again, maybe we'll have even more of those people come into auditions. And because whether we knew we were going to be doing it or not, we're creating a community here. We're creating
Absolutely. A
family here. We had to be reminded by one of our cast members last December, like I think it was like the end of November, and Larry, who was in our first show, he sends an email and says, so, you guys going to have a, you know, NFDC Christmas party? Like, oh my God, we need to have a Christmas party. We have enough people to have a Christmas party.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess we will then. Yes. And, you know, we didn't even, you know, having community and having, you know, this is in the family without even knowing we were developing it. It's awesome.
Well, I think this is exciting because I'm working with a couple groups and listening to this. I'm so excited to take it back, but one of them is called Power of the Pen, and it's for students in the state of Ohio that are in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And when the gentleman originally contacted Ideas Unleashed, it was more of a, how can I use podcasting for funders to find me and to find out what we're about? And when I saw what they did, I thought, why aren't we using these for the students to go on and tell us their stories
mm-hmm.
through their own voices? And how cool is that? That they're, like you said, this is me speaking on the web. This is what I created. And the more important thing was, is as Tom and I spoke about Power of the Pen, he was so excited about that idea, but he went a step further and said, let's put it as, you know, not only a podcast, but letting the children listen to each other and respond and give them critiques on what it was. And as long as it's not vengeful or hateful and it's positive and it's critiquing each other, why not do it that way? Mm-hmm. And it, now it's kind of gone on, but not, we don't have any of this in Cleveland, Ohio that I know of. So to be able to take this back and say, there's a drama club that's actually doing something like this, and they're building this whole little community. But then thinking about this, we have another, the foundation that I work for funds something called Mad Factory. And it's students K through 8 that are in like their own drama club. Our schools are very limited in their arts funding to the state. So we actually fund this as a private program that gives scholarships to kids. And I just thought, what a great idea this would be to take back to them to really figure out what they're about, what they're doing, and building that whole entire community. And I hope that maybe we can trade some information, because I would love for them to see exactly what you're doing and take it
home. I think that is probably, from this conversation, one thing that I've kind of discovered is one of the most important things that has come out of these podcasts for us. The idea, spreading the idea that anyone can do what we did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We literally, overnight, came up with this idea. We were talking about it in the backseat, while I was in the backseat of them, us driving to a theater company. We're like, you know, we should start our own theater group. We have these ideas, we have this philosophy of the way we want to run our group. No one else is doing what we're doing. And we did it.
Yeah.
Three of us. And then flying by the seat of our pants.
Shit, yeah.
And the fact that we've been able to record and document our process, I mean, literally from the beginning of us creating out of nothing this theater group, means anybody can do it. And it's such an important, I would love to see other groups do what we do, because the values that we're bringing to this theater group, I think, are so important that you don't get. It's such a community theater idea that's what I would want to see other places.
And one of the things that I really love is, like, people trust us with their children.
Yeah.
Like, we have teenagers that have come back to be in our shows, and their parents love us.
Mm-hmm. And we love that.
And we feel like we give them so much, and that comes back to what you were doing with this school group, is that, you know, we have a lot to give, but, you know, we're not establishment kind of people. Mm-hmm. And I like making my own rules, and that's what this is about, you know. And my rules are, there's no bullshit, and we get this done, and we do a good job, and when we're done at the end, everyone gets to be proud and happy, but we're going to work together, and this is a team sport. So
always.
Get in there, Sparky, and get your job done. And, you know, that's the way we feel about it. And that's what happened. And that's the greatest thing, is we control this process.
People love to see, I mean, if you look at something like American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
People just love to see, watch people starting out and going and going and seeing problems and hardships and blah, 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 and then making it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole behind the scenes thing. So, I mean, it would be wonderful to, in all different areas, and I'm not talking about necessarily something that's just creative, but someone who wants to start a business,
mm-hmm.
you know, and here they're starting, and, you know, they're chronicling, you know, how they're going about and all the problems they're having, and, you know, I mean, I bet there would be a great, big audience. I'm sure it's out there, you know, but I think I'm making the first idea of it.
Wow. Even something like somebody who wanted to start a business and went around to various venture capital people and tried to get money and taped those conversations with the venture capitalists and what they told them, you know, even more corporate stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
just opening up what happens.
Well, I think, you know, going back to the American Idol thing, you know, American Idol is just an extension of the nightly news as far as major media is concerned. You know, we've complained, of course, I'm probably older than a lot of folks in here. Every generation complains that, well, the news, all they have is bad stuff, only they have good stuff, and they tell you, well, it's because you don't watch them, we have good stuff, which really isn't necessarily true, because you look at news shows that have a lot of positive stuff, and people do dig them, they get into them. But we have an opportunity in this medium to do positive stuff, positive stories, positive experiences, and so forth. And looking at American Idol, you know, they're casting a net for millions. We're casting a net for thousands.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really conducive to positive energy. You know, it's really conducive to that. And, you know, I would like to know what happened to 10 people who got kicked off American Idol. I'd like to see stories continue. I'd like to see those people blog or podcast. Hey, I was on American Idol, and you know, Simon treated me like crap, and this is what happened the next 6 weeks after. I would listen to that podcast.
I want to know what happened to George from a couple seasons ago.
Exactly.
I'm dying to know where George is.
But you know the weird thing? I could care less what happens to the winner. Because
right.
once that winner's gone, oh, well, they got a contract, blah, blah, blah. Maybe they make it. Maybe they, you know, win a grant. All that's fine. But to be honest with you, I don't care. Because I know they won the prize. I know they're going to get the goodies. I know they're going to be on all the big shows. I know what happens to them.
Well, like,
I don't know what happens to George.
I want to know how that affects their privacy once they get on American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there are just millions and millions of people who
right.
know how they are. What are they giving up to
right.
be on that show? And especially to be a loser on that show where they don't have a prize at the
well,
end.
Well, it's like
it.
All reality TV.
Yeah.
I mean, every reality show is the same way. Yeah. But that goes back to what
to do reality shows on the things that we're interested in with the knowledge that you know 10 people who are really into what you're talking about, or you know 100 people. And the truth is that the community as a whole benefits, I think, from that type of thing. Taking media into a positive direction, because that's not what big media is doing.
No.
They're not interested in a positive direction. They're interested in the bottom line. And so they want to tell you the story about, you know, Ted Bundy killing a bunch of people.
Hmm.
They don't want to tell you the story about, you know, the lady who lived next door who, you know, wrote a book and started, you know, a charity in Africa. They don't want to do that story.
Or just
yeah.
even took care of Ted Bundy's, you know, 20 stray cats that he left behind.
There
like, you know.
Well,
I hope that we are bringing a little bit more laughter into the world with our stories of our political unrest in New Delhi causing us
to have delayed costumes.
Delayed
and
costumes
so on.
And missed sound effects, so we have to use a candelabra and a nutcracker to make a sound effect. You know, we're through our challenges, we're making people laugh.
Right. Well, that's the other thing, is that, like, so many things appear to be effortless, right? And while it appears to be effortless, I'm sure to some people what we do, when we do these podcasts, we pull back the curtain and we say, look at all of this stuff that we had to do, you know, and we're just three people with, like, no money and an unusual amount of dedication and lack of sleep.
Yeah.
You, too,
yeah.
can pull this off.
You, too, can have a theater company and...
Well, I believe we're out of time.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you guys so much.
Is it the North Fulton Drama Club?
DramaClub.org.
Okay,
that is
thank
us.
You, Joe, for
okay.
helping us.
Thank you.